Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Hashtag Me Too Informed Therapy, Counseling Approaches for Men, Women, and Couples by David B. Wexler and Holly B. Sweet. Narrated by Vanessa Daniels. Preface. As the Me Too movement exploded into national consciousness in 2017, we saw and heard more and more stories of men being forced to self-examine, women speaking up, and couples tackling issues that had never quite emerged before. A book needed to be written to help counselors find ways to constructively address Me Too behavior in their therapy sessions. Some of our colleagues have told us that we would get into trouble for trying to write a book on the Me Too movement in these volatile times. Everybody knew that no matter how respectful, nuanced, and careful we were bound to alienate some readers, those who would believe we were apologists for male predators, or that we were not calling out women who remained silent, or that we were blaming the victim by asking women to take a more assertive stance wherever possible, or that we believed too easily that there were women who unfairly accused men, or that we were putting too much of a burden on women to help educate men about how to act. Because of the importance of the issues raised, however, we were willing to write a book that might stir up controversy, believing it is better to engage in difficult dialogues than shy away from them. David. As a man, I feel a sense of collective responsibility. Like many other men I knew, the Me Too stories started me scouring through my past for incidents where I might have made a woman uncomfortable, crossed a line that I didn't realize was there, or didn't care because I was young, male, and stupid. And, like many other men, I became determined to utilize everything I knew about how men think, feel, and act to help wake myself and other men up. Holly. As the Me Too movement began to gain traction, I found myself remembering the experiences I have had as a woman, where I accepted the status quo that men were more valuable than women, that men had a right to put down women or take advantage of them sexually. I remembered all the stories I heard for many years from students, clients, and friends about the sexual misconduct they suffered at the hands of men, from clumsy contact to near rape. Most of all, I remember the value of helping women to be more assertive, to become survivors and not victims, to be in control and not controlled, and to harness personal and collective power. I wasn't always on the front line of feminist political action, but I did what I could to help women speak up. The two of us have collectively spent decades as clinicians in the trenches, confronting men and helping them heal, and helping women recover from sexual misconduct and become more empowered. We have navigated the fine line between addressing clearly unacceptable behavior by men and expressing compassion, most of the time, for the better person within a man who has violated a woman's sexual boundaries. We have worked with women who have been victims of sexual misconduct, encouraging and supporting them in their efforts to deal successfully with the consequences of men behaving badly. We offer you the benefit of what we have both learned from clinical experience, from the research we have been influenced by, and from what we continue to struggle with in the path towards full equality and respect between the sexes. We know that we don't know it all. We are white, straight, and privileged. We can only see what we see from our own perspectives. We are therefore grateful that we have been able to benefit from the wisdom of many colleagues who have offered their valuable perspectives about issues we may not fully understand. And we are grateful that we have been able to include at least one chapter specifically addressing the uniquely challenging Me Too experiences for people of color or other marginalized groups, especially the LGBTQ+ population. Thank you to Leona Smith DiFaustino for her valuable contributions. Please join us on our journey to understand and constructively work with clients who have been offenders or victims, as our culture continues to hear women's voices too long suppressed. David B. Wexler, Ph.D., Holly B. Sweet, Ph.D., November 2020. Introduction. The rapid rise of the Me Too movement has created a seismic shift in how we perceive relationships between men and women. But the scope of behaviors that fall within this category is full of gray areas for many clients, supervisors, professors, employees, and students. And for all of us counselors, therapists, and educators who are trying to guide people through this, we will discuss the range of Me Too behaviors and motivations and consequences in the gray areas that comprise sexual misconduct. It is important to note that we will not be covering criminal behavior such as rape, domestic violence, or child molestation, which is outside the scope of this book. These are issues that we leave to other books. They are beyond the gray areas with which we will be dealing, stupid and juvenile actions, as well as more serious offenses such as non-criminal sexual assault. Still, the psychological and social conditions that generate the range of sexual misconduct that we actually are addressing permeate the environment in which criminals feel empowered to act. We want to help men who offend or are just confused guide women who need help recovering from or stopping harassment and finding a voice, explore ways for men to be allies in the Me Too movement, and help couples whose relationships can be enhanced by understanding Me Too issues. All of us working in the roles of counselors, therapists, and educators need as much information and perspective as possible to explore the complex issues in this particular realm of gender relations in a way that empowers women and helps men be more respectful of women's boundaries. The behaviors we are addressing under the umbrella of hashtag MeToo include those of authority figures in power over subordinates, as well as peer-to-peer sexual misconduct. They include people who might be in a position to advance or sabotage someone's career. While we will not be addressing every single one of these situations in our case studies, we recognize that Me Too violations include actions by a wide variety of men not covered in our book, including military personnel, coaches, therapists, priests, ministers, rabbis, and important political figures. Most of the situations we are addressing involve actions by people who are well known to the victimized party. The situations we explore involve complex interactions and politics between the two individuals that are rarely as simple as one terrible person simply forcing himself on another. It is important to note what we are focusing on in this book, since we cannot address all the circumstances and nuances raised by sexual misconduct. We have therefore chosen ones that we believe might appear often in a clinician's office or in any setting where counseling is taking place. These include exploring the gray areas of sexual misconduct by men towards women, not focusing on women towards women or men towards men. We also chose to include female-identified people under the term women and male-identified people under the term men for the sake of simplicity, although there are certainly unique issues of sexual misconduct towards trans people. In this very complex field, it is tempting to adopt simplistic, black-and-white narratives about Me Too behaviors, like the following. Men who harass women are all sexual predators. Women shouldn't have to make any changes in their behavior. Men who harass or assault women are only and always driven by needs for power. A woman who feels traumatized has always been the victim of assault or harassment. There are no gray areas when it comes to sexual misconduct. Women are always powerless against men who mistreat them sexually. Men don't have any role in the Me Too movement. It's irrelevant to care about why men are doing this. They just need to stop. Of course, our work would be much easier if these beliefs were actually true. But unfortunately, for all of us who prefer simplicity and clarity, these statements are not true. Or, at least, they are only partially true, and they do not apply to all situations that fall under the umbrella of hashtag MeToo. Our book is focused both on finding ways to empower women in confronting sexual misconduct and on understanding and addressing the core problems of men committing sexual misconduct and its impact on women who are the recipients of that behavior. However, we are opposed to declaring a gender war. Men certainly need to be held accountable. But seeing men only as predators and women only as prey is not the way to build the better world of relationships that we all envision. The missions of holding men accountable and trying to engage men in a non-shaming fashion are not incompatible. They're just complicated. And they are easily misunderstood by people in many camps who will insist that the problems are simpler than they really are. The only simple truth is that there is, and always has been, a high frequency of men engaging in sexual behaviors that are damaging to women. And as a society and as people in the helping professions, we need to find ways for these to stop. Part 1. Understanding the impact of the hashtag MeToo movement. Chapter 1. The Big Picture. Sexual misconduct in our culture. Tarana Burke started the MeToo movement over 10 years ago when she encouraged girls and women of color to tell their stories of being victims of sexual assault and harassment, including rape. These stories were important not only as a form of social support from others, they also helped reveal the widespread problem of sexual harassment and assault in American culture. The movement was relatively small until October 2017, when Alyssa Milano created the hashtag MeToo on social media. That hashtag quickly went viral and has now spread to all forms of media. With the advent of the MeToo movement, girls and women finally had a platform and the community support to speak out against men's harassing, abusive, and often criminal behavior. Women were activated to take power individually and collectively, insisting that a woman's voice be equal to that of a man, and that the assault on a woman's psyche and body be made visible and believed. The Me Too movement has given women the chance to speak up, be heard and supported, and to hold their offenders accountable for their actions. The impact of the Me Too movement on our culture. The Me Too movement has had a powerful and positive impact on American culture, finally revealing the widespread incidents of sexual misconduct. There has been much, and long overdue, soul-searching about how to prevent additional Me Too behaviors in academia and in the workplace. Because of the Me Too movement, the attitudes of the American public towards the sexual mistreatment of women by men have undergone a sea change. The Me Too movement provides survivors a context to expose assaults ranging from low-level sexual misconduct by a peer, for example, making a sexually inappropriate comment, to rape by an authority figure, such as a doctor or supervisor, against whom one often has little recourse, especially if the perpetrator is well-known and powerful. In recent years, the power of the movement to topple public figures accused of sexual misconduct has risen. These men, such as Al Franken and Charlie Rose, were respected in their careers until it became clear they violated the personal boundaries of women who worked for them in demeaning ways. Questions have been raised about how power plays into sexual misconduct and how men in authority may feel they have license to take advantage of women's subordinates in disrespectful and coercive ways. In egregious cases of sexual assault, such as Larry Nassar with the women's gymnastics team, Harvey Weinstein with aspiring actresses, and Jeffrey Epstein with underage girls, their sense of entitlement and power associated with their positions was used to intimidate and silence women who were or felt powerless to confront the perpetrator. Sexual misconduct is not limited to positional power in the workplace. Adolescent male bonding that takes place in fraternities or high school clubs can lead to sexual disrespect and degradation of women. This disrespect is not only allowed, but often ignored by authorities, prevailing in a climate where men often assume the right to treat women as sexual objects, and women don't often feel like they have the right to speak out against this treatment. This attitude was seen publicly during the confirmation hearings of Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. As a high school student, Kavanaugh belonged to a prep school culture that encouraged men to sexually harass women and assume that women deserved it or wanted it. Even if women made it clear they didn't want it, their wishes were ignored, sometimes with physical force. Worse, male students in such a culture are often encouraged by their peers to act like a stud. Having non-relational sex with women who didn't want it, but who felt pressured or unable to say no. Like Clarence Thomas before him, accused by Anita Hill of sexual harassment during his Senate hearings for the Supreme Court, Kavanaugh went on to become a Supreme Court judge, while the testimony of their accusers, Anita Hill and Christine Blasey Ford, was not seen as credible or important by the senators involved in the hearings, the large majority of them men. These senators rejected their compelling testimonies of sexual misconduct in favor of what might be considered the old boys' network to allow Kavanaugh and Thomas to become Supreme Court justices. What exactly is sexual misconduct? Determining and agreeing on what exactly qualifies as sexual misconduct is complicated. We do not claim to have the last word on the exact definition of the term. The term sexual misconduct does not have a legal meaning and covers a range of attitudes and actions that society does not universally agree upon. The ill-defined situations and nuances associated with the term can unfortunately lead to gray areas when discussing certain behaviors. Joanne Lauscius, a journalist for the Ottawa Citizen, says, "What is sexual misconduct exactly? Depends on whom you ask." Elizabeth Sheehy, the Shirley Greenberg Chair for Women in the Legal Profession, University of Ottawa, is quoted as saying, "Sexual misconduct is a social issue and not a fixed line. It's not found under criminal law, in human rights codes, or collective agreements." Allie Crockford, a public educator at the Ottawa Rape Crisis Center, is quoted as saying that sexual misconduct is a term we're seeing a lot more often. "We're seeing it as a catch-all phrase for sexual behavior that we find unacceptable, but we are still unclear how it should be classified. It could be any number of things. Someone is made to feel uncomfortable, or they feel they are being watched or looked at in a certain way. To be honest, women know it from day-to-day life, but they can't look at it and say there's a legal definition." Michelle Cottle, former contributing editor at The Atlantic, goes further to say, "There are almost infinite shades of creepy behavior. It's hard to tell where the new lines will be drawn since it is uncharted territory. This landscape is confusing and varies considerably. For example, on the university level, definitions are quite different. A few examples show how varied and sometimes vague these definitions can be. Massachusetts Institute of Technology guidelines define sexual misconduct as a broad range of behaviors, including sexual harassment, non-consensual sexual contact, non-consensual sexual penetration, rape, and sexual exploitation. Duke University's definition focuses more on violence, defining sexual misconduct as sex/gender-based harassment, sex/gender violence, sexual exploitation, relationship violence, domestic violence, and dating violence, and stalking. For the purposes of our book, we have limited our definition of Me Too behaviors to any misconduct of a sexual nature that is of lesser offense than a felony sexual assault, such as rape and molestation, particularly where the situation is normally non-sexual and therefore unusual for sexual behavior, or where there is some aspect of personal power or authority that makes sexual behavior inappropriate. A common theme, and the reason for the term misconduct, is that these violations occur during work or in a situation of power imbalance. It frames offenses which are non-criminal, but nevertheless violating of another person's personal boundary in the area of sexuality and intimate personal relationships. This definition includes behavior both by peers and by authority figures. Throughout the book, we will be using the terms sexual misconduct and Me Too behaviors interchangeably as broad categories encompassing other descriptions like sexual boundary violations and sexual harassment and inappropriate sexual behavior. We struggled with the fact that there is no clear consensus about what sexual misconduct covers and can be conflated with physically abusive or criminal behavior such as rape. Given this lack of clarity, we chose to concentrate primarily on the gray area, the many different and confusing aspects of inappropriate sexual boundary violations committed by men towards women in both personal and professional settings. It is our hope that we can help elucidate the nuances of sexual misconduct that will help both men and women better understand and change unwanted sexual behavior that is widespread in our culture. Sexual misconduct, a spectrum of behaviors and contexts. The many definitions of sexual misconduct make it hard to understand what we consider important distinctions. Was the boundary violation verbal or physical? If physical, was it a touch or was it penetration? Where did this misconduct take place? Who was involved? And to add to the complexity, one woman's experience of a sexual boundary violation, inappropriate behavior, or sexual harassment may be another woman's experience of friendly flirting. Every woman and every story is different. Past experience of any kind of sexual trauma or harm can be a determining variable how severely a woman is affected. The idea that sexual misconduct is on a spectrum of behaviors is not always popular. Matt Damon found this out through reactions to his statements in an interview with Peter Travers. In the interview, Damon said, "I do believe that there's a spectrum of behavior, right? And we're going to have to figure, you know, there's a difference between patting someone on the butt and rape or child molestation, right? Both of these behaviors need to be confronted and eradicated without question, but they shouldn't be conflated, right?" In swift reaction to his comments, a tweet by Alyssa Milano on December 15, 2017, confronted this concept when she said, "I have been a victim of each component of the sexual assault spectrum of which you speak. They all hurt. And they are all connected to a patriarchy intertwined with normalized, accepted, even welcome misogyny." In an interview with Edward Helmore, Minnie Driver echoed this attitude in her reaction to Damon's comments, saying, "I realize that most men, good men, men I love, there is a cutoff in their ability to understand. It's all fucking wrong and it's all bad. And until you start seeing it under one umbrella, it's not your job to compartmentalize or judge what is worse and what is not. However, we do believe that Me Too sexual misconduct involves a spectrum of behaviors, much as one looks at the autism spectrum disorder gradation of malfunction, from high-functioning Asperger's disorder to low-functioning autism, or the domestic violence continuum of verbal put-downs to massive beatings. It therefore is imperative that we categorize and contextualize these behaviors according to a rubric of factors that allow for the complexity of sexual misconduct. Treatments of victims and offenders will necessarily be different depending on some of the following factors. 1. People involved. Is it peer-to-peer, such as two students at a party? Or is there a power differential, such as a professor, student or supervisor, supervisee, where resisting sexual misconduct could result in a failing grade or being fired or demoted? 2. Type of behavior. Is it verbal misconduct or physical misconduct? If verbal, what does it look like? If physical, how is this defined? Is it inappropriate touching, sexual assault, non-consensual and violent behavior, or somewhere in between? 3. Context/environment. Is it in a professional/academic setting, such as a classroom or office meeting, or in a personal context, such as a party or in a bar? What is the culture of that environment? Is it sexist? Male-dominated? Is alcohol involved? 4. Differences in status. Is the victim from a marginalized group, a person of color, lower socioeconomic status, an immigrant, or lesbian, bisexual, gay, transgender questioning, LGBTQ, and the perpetrator from a privileged group, such as white men in faculty positions or CEOs? What if a woman of color is a CEO and her supervisees are white men? How does race and ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender identity, and socioeconomic status play into the difficulty women may have in speaking up or being believed if they are victims of sexual misconduct? 5. Presence of others. Did the misconduct take place alone, or were there others present? If others were present, how did they respond? For example, in the case of Chanel Miller, who was raped by Brock Turner, a Stanford student she had just met at a party on campus, two passers-by helped apprehend the perpetrator and supported the victim's testimony. But what if she had been alone? Would it have been reduced to a he said, she said scenario? Even with eyewitness testimony, Brock Turner was given a light sentence, despite the severity of the physical sexual assault. Why was this done? If he had been a man of color and she a white woman, would it have played out differently in terms of jail time? 6. Resources. Does the victim have or know of available resources that handle suspected cases of sexual misconduct, such as company human resources or campus crisis centers? What if the sexual misconduct takes place in a social setting or a work setting without clear channels to report misconduct? To whom does the victim appeal? 7. Capacity of individuals involved handling the situation. Was the woman intoxicated to the point where she was not able to give consent? Was she underage? Did she have a mental or developmental disability? Was she suffering from severe depression or acute anxiety? What about the offender? Was his condition such that he can't remember what he did? What responsibility does he have in terms of his behavior? What responsibility does the victim have in setting clear personal boundaries? These are factors that clinicians and counselors may face when working with men and women where issues of sexual misconduct are present. It is often the gray areas encountered in the varieties and circumstances of reported sexual misconduct that make it challenging to deal with effectively in therapy. Complex issues associated with the Me Too movement. To further complicate matters, or make them more interesting, depending on your perspective, the following issues make therapy additionally challenging. We know that many men, often in positions of power, have engaged in damaging behaviors toward many women. But however important and necessary the Me Too movement has been and continues to be, there are several issues surrounding the movement that leave many men and women confused. As these issues are addressed in constructive ways, the Me Too movement will gain more power and will positively alter how women are treated in this culture. 1. Social media tends to tell only one side of the story. Women who tell their stories of sexual misconduct on social media are often women who have been victims of men who have abused them. While this is certainly true in most cases of Me Too stories, it skews public perception in the direction of women as powerless victims and men as powerful aggressors. There is no counterpart to good men trying their best to work and socialize with women in appropriate and respectful ways. There is no hashtag WeToo movement. Therefore, men are too often seen as the enemy, and good men are lumped together with offenders or sidelined, not seen as active and crucial partners in stopping sexual harassment and misconduct. 2. Not all Me Too behaviors are the same. There are important differences among Me Too behaviors. However, those differences and definitions are unclear. For example, when does sexual misbehavior cross the line into sexual misconduct? When does sexual misconduct cross the line into sexual assault? What definition of sexual assault is being used, since definitions of sexual assault vary from state to state? It is important to see the Me Too movement as challenging a collection of bad behaviors, all disturbing but not all criminal or violent offenses, rather than combine them all into one concept, typically seen as men sexually assaulting women. Like degrees of murder, degrees of sexual assault vary depending on the level of violence, the perpetrator's intent, and the outcomes. For example, some of the names on the supposedly secret list of shitty media men, which everyone in the media world has seen, are of men who appear to be merely awkward, unskilled communicators who did not intend to harm the women involved, while others are alleged to have committed deliberate acts of violence and coercion. These distinctions, and the gray areas in which many Me Too behaviors lie, must be understood by all of us working with offenders, as well as those of us working with people on the receiving end of offenses. Furthermore, Me Too behaviors are not always male-to-female harassment or misconduct. Women can harass men and women, and men can harass men. Women can be disempowered by being perceived as victims who need excessive protections. It is important to note that women who feel shame.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?